Ramsey TV.
October 25th, 1997, Fairview, South Carolina. The Great Debate, Martin Zender versus Pastor Roscoe Clay Kent, 6:58 p.m. I'm sitting at the table, ready for the debate to begin. At 6:53, I had written the premise, the proposition for the debate on the whiteboard in front of the church. Rick Farwell was behind me at the podium. He was the moderator of the debate. I would say 50 people were in attendance. Yeah, tickets sold out. That's right. Was I nervous? Yeah, I was a little bit nervous, but I was sure of what I was teaching. But I was warned ahead of time, don't look like you're ganging up on an old man. I said, old man, this guy is a fighter. This guy is he's a rambling man. He's a rogue. He's sarcastic. He's argumentative. He'll run roughshod over anybody. I understood the concern. I didn't want to, you know, look like I was being mean, but yet I wasn't going to cut the guy any slack, because by in no means was he a feeble old man. Physically, bodily, he was infirm, because as I closed yesterday's show, we see him approaching the table with his cane. So he was feeble. I'll have you know, it was that afternoon, Clay got into town and he was checking into his hotel. And I was staying at the same hotel, and I saw him struggling with his bags and his books, and I helped him. I'm not trying to sound like a Boy Scout or anything, but I helped him with his bags. I helped him sign in. I mean, I was very respectful, and I helped him like I would help anybody else. I would do the same thing for my friend Joel Osteen. Yes, I would. I would help him. So, would I help Satan with his bags? No, probably not. I draw the line with Satan, but Osteen and Clay Kent, yes. So I planned for 2 weeks. My whole argument was to be to hold Kent to the proposition, because that's the anchor. In a debate, the premise or the proposition is the anchor by which everyone navigates. It's like the sideline on a football field. There's a rule. There's rules. And you have to follow the rules. So there I am. The place is abuzz. Like the beginning of a concert. You know, you see the crowd is murmuring and everybody's waiting. And I don't know if he did this on purpose, but Kent was delaying his entrance. I think he did it on purpose. He was a showman. So I'm waiting. Rick's waiting. And then he came down the north aisle. All eyes turned to look at him. It was like at a wedding. Except instead of here comes the bride, I'm surprised Kent didn't have entrance music. Like, cue the entrance music. What would Kent's song be for his grand entrance? Probably Rocky. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, that would have been suitable. But actually, the fact that you could hear a pin drop was much more dramatic than any Rocky music. So here he comes. We're all turning to watch him. He's heading down the aisle. He looks right at me. And then, without moving his head, his eyes move toward the whiteboard. His cane had been dug into the carpet. But at that point, he steadied himself. He lifted his cane and he pointed at the whiteboard as if to shoot a hole through it. And he pointed directly at the words that were written there. And the words were, man's will can operate independently of God. And verbatim, the man said in a loud voice, And I'm going to intone it exactly as he said it, because this image, this scene is embedded in my mind. "Oh, no," said Kent. He really did say it in a sing-songy voice that belied his 75 years. "Oh, no. This deck is stacked. This debate is slanted in your favor." He points at me. He's got his cane with one hand. This guy got new energy. His cane with one arm pointing at the board, his finger pointing at me. "This debate is slanted in your favor before it even begins. You can't write that on the board. Man's will can be independent of God. Only an idiot would believe that." End of quote. This is exactly what the man said. "You can't write that. Only an idiot would believe that man's will can be independent of God." Folks, if my jaw had not been hinged to my skull by various tendons and muscles designed by God, it would have been sitting on the table next to my voluminous collection of reference material. I knew it. I knew something weird was going to happen. I just couldn't believe, even though Rick had phoned Pastor Kent the week before the debate, "Are you sure you understand the premise? Man's will can operate independently." "Yeah, I got it. "Shut up, punk." No, he didn't say that, but, you know, he was capable of saying something like that. But I knew something was going to happen, and it did. I just didn't know that it would be this particular thing, and I didn't think it would happen 2 minutes before the start of the debate. The guy was unpredictable. But this is why I had begged Rick for a premise. We needed some kind of lighthouse. We needed a rule because of Kent's unpredictability. I thought it would head off Kent's rascality at the pass. So much for that idea. So Kent did not advance. He stood there. The person that nobody was moving. We all just like turned to wax. The one guy that moved was Rick. Rick Farwell, the moderator, the pastor of Grace and Truth Chapel in Fairview, South Carolina. He quickly walked around my side of the table toward Kent. I mean, he had heard Kent's remarks. Everybody heard Kent's remarks. God heard Kent's remarks. Neighbors a quarter of a mile away reported hearing Kent's remarks. So Rick's walking around the table. He passes me, and I say, as he's heading toward Pastor Kent, "Rick, didn't you say he agreed to the proposition?" Rick didn't even look at me. He was nervous. He seemed a little panicked. So in a flash then, he went up to Kent, who by this time was moving toward Rick. And Kent then put his hand on the table to steady himself. And Rick tried to remain calm. And he spoke as if this were the most normal thing that had ever happened at the Pauline Church of Christ. Did I say that? Was that the name of the place? Nah, I may have misnamed the place. It was Pauline Church of Christ. Yeah, Clay, Rick said. Yeah, we discussed this on the telephone, remember? And you agreed to argue the affirmative of this proposition. Now, I told you, and you've seen the photograph. Pastor Kent had this Vincent Price. He looked like Vincent Price in The Pit and the Pendulum. And he ran, he had very long fingers, bony fingers. He ran his fingers through his Vincent Price haircut. And he said this, and again, I am quoting, "I am not having a debate with that on the board. Only an idiot." Here he comes with the idiot again. "Only an idiot would believe that anything could be independent of God." Rick prefaced many of his sayings with. Oh, but Clay, you did agree over the phone that, well, then, this is what he said, again quoting, then I must not have been clear about what you were talking about. It's beginning. It is beginning. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to explain. It took me weeks to figure out what had happened and why. And I'm going to explain to you Kent's motives in all of this. The obfuscation, the fogging of the issue. And this is going to give you, as it gave me, insight into the mindset of those who would insist on human free will, on man's supposed independence of God, even though they only ask for a little bit of independence, which is logically impossible. I must not have understood the proposition, he said. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking to myself, that's not likely. That's what I thought to myself at the time. But as I later reflected on it and thought about it, I'm thinking, yeah, that probably is likely. So, there we stood, three adults, turned to wax, except for Rick, who was very animated, the gazing stock of believers gathered from 13 states to witness the great debate. And I'd studied for 3 weeks. And by golly, I was going to salvage this debate. This may have been foolish on my part, but I'm glad I did it. I should have just said, okay, forget it. Well, let me explain to you what happened first. So I'm recovered from my initial shock. And I said, well, it's no problem. We'll just come up with a new proposition. Okay, you don't like this one? I'm wanting to compromise because I'm wanting this thing to happen. I said, this shouldn't be too hard. So I'm thinking, I can think pretty quickly on my feet. I'm saying, well, how about this? I'm trying to think of the most simple thing I could think of. I mean, this proposition was beautifully naked. I just loved it. It's a perfect description of free will. Operate, man's will can operate independently from God. I said, okay, why don't we just say, well, right on the board, say, man has a free will. How about that? Man has a free will. You argue for it, I'll argue against it. I can't thought for a moment. But the moment passed very quickly. And he said, nope, that's no good. That's no good. Why is it no good? I know why it was no good. I'm going to tell you in this show. I'll explain that to you. Okay, I said, how about man has a limited free will? Because I knew that is exactly what he believed. You would think, I was sure, that he would agree to this premise. Okay, this is a real compromise, but I'm trying to salvage this thing, like I said. So I say, how about man has a limited free will? And then you can see the agitation just coming across Kent's face. Oh, that's no good either. That's no good either. And then he said this. Are you ready for this? I don't want the word free anywhere up there. What? But Clay, I protested. You used the word free all the time because I listened to the guy's tapes. You use it on your tapes, I told him. I said, I know you believe that man has a limited free will. I've heard you say it, limited free will. The word free is in there, so why don't we use it? And you're not going to believe this one. You ready? Verbatim. I'll remember this till the day of the snatching away and beyond. If I ever used the word free, I must have been drunk. Mind you, he's a very intelligent man. He had over 600 tapes expositing upon scriptures. This man believed in the salvation of all. You may ask, well, how can somebody believe in the salvation of all and still hold to human free will? Well, it's hard for me to put myself in the place of such a person, but this is how they do it. It's illogical. It makes no sense, but this is how they do it in their own minds. They see that God has an ultimate goal, and God is going to reach his ultimate goal, but he can reach his ultimate goal without controlling anyone. He gives them, these are the technical terms used by the limited free will people, he gives them a certain amount of freedom. We must at least have one iota of freedom. Man has a little bit of freedom. But as I've been saying, this is so important. There's no such thing as a little bit of freedom. It's like being a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't. If you're truly free, even for a nanosecond, then you can commandeer the ship. You use that freedom and if it's truly free, then God can't stop you from never giving it up. At what point would a limited free will be given up by a person who doesn't want to give it up? Well, then God can take away. The argument goes, God can take away your limited freedom whenever he wants to. Well, wait a minute. How is that possible? Because if the person is free at the time, before God takes it away, then that person, if that person is truly independent of God, can say, no, you're not taking it back. And they can decide if they're truly free. And this is before God decides to take away the limited free will, before God decides to step in and say, okay, that's enough. No more for you. But see, before he does this, God, hypothetically, before God does this, the person's free. So a free will can't it? Refuse for God to take it back. It's the end of the game. It's impossible. So as I said, I had listened to several of Kent's tapes before the debate, and I had copied some of his comments verbatim into my notebook. By the way, here's a photo from the actual debate. You can see all of my books stacked up there, all my resource materials. I was ready. One of those resources was a notebook on which I had written all of Kent's quotes from his tapes. And from one of his tapes, tape number 358, titled The Hardening of Pharaoh's Heart, Clay said this: Pharaoh was free to choose. Now, obviously, you and I know this goes completely against Romans chapter 9. Where Pharaoh is clearly said not to be free to choose, but God made him a vessel of dishonor, and God hardened his heart. And during the debate, 3 minutes into the debate, I'm going to explain how we went and did it anyway. Clay said, quote, and I'm going to give you some more quotes from the debate itself, quote, debate, unquote, I think God can allow men to have a certain amount of freedom, if I can use that word. He uses the word freedom in the debate 3 minutes after he said, before the debate started, I never used the word free. So he says, I think God can allow men to have a certain amount of freedom, if I can use that word. What, the word you said you never used? The word you said you would only use if you were drunk? And still work all things out for the counsel of his will. This is the inanity. This is the faulty logic of people who say God can still get what he wants. These limited free will people. God can still get what he wants without controlling every little detail. But every major event, any event, consists of hundreds of thousands of minor events that if any of them are missing, then the major event doesn't happen. It's all coordinated. You and I know this. Isaiah 46:10, God is operating all in accord with the counsel of his own. No, wait a minute. No. That's Ecclesiastes. That's Ephesians 1:11. I'm going to go to Isaiah 46:10. God tells the end from the beginning. We know from the Psalms, all my days were written before there was one of them. It's all been scripted. The whole of life, every detail of everyone's life, of every son and daughter of Adam has been scripted ahead of time by God. Their days were scripted. Oh, you mean like Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday? No, every detail of every day. So Clay, in the very debate, used the word free. Was he drunk at the debate? According to his own testimony, he was drunk at the debate because, well, if I ever used the word free, I must have been drunk. Well, you used it on tape number 358, which I quoted to him. Were you drunk when you made that tape? Later in the debate, he said, first of all, I do not believe that because God gives man a certain amount of freedom, that means that God is not in control. How can God be in control of someone who has freedom? Forget certain amount of. These are qualifiers that need all to be thrown out. A little bit, certain amount, one iota of. The key word is freedom. This is why the proposition on the board was so important. Independence of God. Ladies and gentlemen, free will, naked, exposed to the world, is independence from God. That's what the word free means. Later in the debate, he said, a man has power over his own will. And he called that an absolute statement. Oh, wait till I tell you about the absolute and the relative. So I still have to tell you how the debate started. We haven't gotten there yet. I'm just kind of peeking into the debate, pulling out bits. He said in the debate, because I made tapes. Listen, Rick Farwell was videotaping the debate. So he had a big camera in front of us, like we were on ABC News. 60 Minutes. And I was also recording it, my own private recording. It's a good thing I recorded it privately on my Marantz tape recorder because Rick burned. Let me repeat this. Let me slow down. Take a breath. Rick burned the videotape from the debate. Burned it. I think he was embarrassed about what happened. During the debate, Clay said he has power over his own will, speaking of mankind. That's an absolute statement, Clay said this. That's an absolute statement. And don't sit here and tell me, because I was sitting down. He was sitting down. Don't sit here and tell me that God isn't giving him that freedom. I'll use the word freedom. Twice he said, I'll use the word freedom. But when I wanted to put that on the whiteboard, let's just put man has a certain amount of freedom, a limited free will. No. I don't want the word free anywhere up there. You don't? Ah, ladies and gentlemen, why? I'm going to tell you why. It's important to understand why. So by his own admission, Clay was drunk when he said these things. He was drunk on tape number 358. He was drunk at the debate. But of course, he wasn't. He was not drunk alcoholically. He was drunk theologically. He was lit up. He was lit, man, theologically lit. He was off his rocker. Inebriated. Drunk on the power grab that is in all humanity until they learn the truth from God. This power grab of wanting to be the captains of their own fates, the authors of their own salvation, the savers of their own souls. They like to say God's in control, but none of them mean it. And here we get the duplicity. This is the key, the duplicity of saying God's in control, not really believing it. It was essential for Pastor Kent to make sure that that premise was erased from the whiteboard because he knew that he was going to be held to one side of the argument. And his entire career on this topic was based on duplicitousness, was based on talking out of both sides of his mouth. And every free will person, limited or total, does this. Every Christian does this. God is sovereign, but in his sovereignty, he's given every human a free will. It is logically impossible. Tomorrow, I'm going to tell you how the debate started. But after the debate, I'll give you this little bit before I go today. I talked to an old friend of the pastor's who had once asked Clay why he made so many tapes. He had over 600 tapes. Big catalog. Listen, all this tape. Very impressive. I talked to a friend of his. And I think this friend of his saw Rick's side at that time, my side of the argument. He said, I asked Clay one time, why do you make so many tapes and never commit anything to writing? Clay's answer, when you write something down, someone can hold you to it. And that must have included propositions written upon the whiteboards, any whiteboard, because the whiteboard and the words upon it, the stark, naked, beautiful words, were summarily erased. And the debate was thrown into chaos. But what happened during the debate became, for me, a great education into the mindset of someone who wants God to be sovereign, but at the same time wants a piece of the pie.